Welcome, everyone, to Traveling with Françoise. I am Françoise Rhodes, your host. Thanks for joining us as we shift into travel mode here on the show. Really excited about this hour. I'm always excited about every single show. Joining us in the boardroom is Sean Flanagan. Sean, here we go. Hour two.
Hour two.
I know.
Just like that. Comes quick.
There you go. All our Arizona folks, all our people who listen to the syndicated travel portion, travel hour of the show. So we do start here locally in the Coachella Valley at 11 a.m. And you can always catch us streaming. We are streaming, and you can listen to the show from anywhere in the world by using your free mobile or your free app for all mobile devices and computers too. You can just, you know, click that listen live button. All right, lots of things happening on today's show. We are going to be talking to Deanne Lubel, who just returned from Thailand. Just talking to her briefly. It was an experience of a lifetime. She learned so much on this trip. It was just a different type of trip than what, you know, a lot of us are used to. We get used to cruise ships and just staying in the cities and not venturing out too much. And, you know, it's just, and we have great trips. And I'm not saying there is a darn thing wrong with that. That's fantastic. But once in a while, you need to do those life-changing trips that kind of get you out of your comfort zone. And you experience so much. It's unbelievable. So Deanne will be telling us a little bit, quite a bit, actually. I'm going to have Ron for the last three quarters of the show. So we have a lot to talk about. We want to congratulate our winners in the first hour of the show who won some tickets to the Short Film Festival coming up and Palm Springs Aerial Tramway. So I want you to know on the website, we have a lot of contests there. They're all free. Check it out, travelingwithfrancoise.com. The two-night stay at the Omni Tucson National will be closing on June 3rd. So you need to get over there and sign up for that along with some other stuff. And then I will be adding some more new contests this coming up week. All right. Well, I wanted to give you a little bit of heads up on some of the noise out there in the world of travel. Well, it says this summer, airlines are expecting the busiest summer in the history of U.S. air travel in the history, estimating that 246.1 million passengers will fly with U.S. airlines between June 1st and August 31st. That averages to about 2.68 million passengers per day. Wow. That is a lot of people.
Do they say why they believe that it picked up the way it did? Or
let's see. They
just kind of the stars aligned.
Yes. The company that did this, was it AAA? It wasn't AAA. But the organization that did this survey said that a strong economy and historically low airfares for helping, because the fuel is going up. We know fuel is going up. Some
right.
places, it's $5 a gallon. I hear in L.A. and there are places that it is $5 a gallon now. But they say it's just the overall economy, a good, strong economy. People are becoming more adventurous. It says summer passenger numbers forecast by A4A would be a 3.7% increase from last the total last year when the record was 237.3 million travelers. So, it, and even though, too, remember they're making more seats on the jets. They have squeezed them down in size of seats.
Yeah, they keep adding seats.
So more people get to fly as well. So I thought that was pretty interesting. So it is going to be a very busy summer out there. Plan ahead. Try to avoid going to national parks and such on the weekends. Oh, try to avoid that. Yosemite and whatnot. I tell you, plan ahead on some of those because they are so busy. Our national parks are, and even state parks are getting so many visitors this past couple of years that you really don't want to sit in a car in line trying to get through the gate for 3 hours to go in there and spend an hour or two. All right, Alaska Airlines passengers will soon notice something different when they order in their in-flight cocktails or coffee. They are getting rid of the plastic stirring sticks. Yep. They say that plastic is one of the worst items that the world has to
use. Yeah, there's a bunch in the ocean.
Yeah, they're everywhere. Plastic is everywhere. It doesn't break down for years, if it ever even does break down.
Right.
So they are going to, I don't know what they're going to be giving. What are they going to give? They're going to, they're going to be giving them a compostable version made of white birch. Citrus picks will switch from plastic to bamboo.
Huh.
Yeah. So I guess these will all break down
in the
environment. So there you go. Don't panic if you don't get your little plastic stirring sticks. I guess that means all that little fancy stuff they used to, remember they used to put little logos, emblems and stuff at the top of them.
Oh,
and
right.
Yeah, Jack has a collection that his mother actually was saving that they have all these funny different little things on them. They're little collector items. So there you go. No more plastic sticks. And speaking of traveling, here's good news for you. The east and west sides of the Sierra Nevada Mountains are reunited once again, and you can drive the incredible Tioga Pass Road, which is SR-120W, all the way through Yosemite National Park to and from Mono County. So there you go. That road is finally open. Remember, it closed during the winters because they had the mudslides and all this crazy stuff going on. Those are now closed. There are a few roads that still remain closed. Red Meadows Road to Devil's Post Pile opening has been delayed due to significant road damage. They're working on that. Aurora Canyon Road to Masonic to Bodai, that is still closed. And Burcham Flat Road to Lobdell Lake, that is closed as well. So even though it looks like most of the roads going up north are open into the Sierra Nevadas, there are a few closures still, so check it out. Again, take some time. You can always run over to AAA. Of course, everything's online. Check it out online before you go on your trip so you don't get... Because sometimes people plan, you know, they plan so their trip so, you know, tightly, the time-wise, that you don't want to have a road closure and then have to go 3 hours out of your way because you didn't know that road was closed. All right, and we started a new segment on the show. I've been doing this on the golf show that I host on Saturdays for 7 years. It's called Bunker Shots Question over there, where I put a question out there on our Facebook page, website, and on the show, and you answer it, and you're entered to win a prize. And we get some really hot topics going on over there on the golf show, and I don't even know why, Sean. I've never done it on this show.
Yeah, it sounds like fun.
It is, and I don't even get it. But all of a sudden, I said, I'm going to start doing it here. And then I put everything, all the answers together. And after about a month goes by, then I draw a winner. And we start all over.
Right.
And I don't think people even care about the prize. They just like to voice their opinion.
Right. They just, yeah.
Yeah. So I started out with a real easy question. And the question was, if you went a week-long, all-expenses-paid trip to anywhere, would it be domestic or international? So what would you take?
I would do international.
Yeah, I would say I would do international also. But here, surprisingly, Gina Edwards said domestic. Eureka, she said domestic. Linda Carmi said international. Susan Brown Rosenberg said international to Dublin. And then it's interesting because all of a sudden people started telling where they wanted to go.
Right.
Yeah. I think they thought I was going to give them a trip. I don't know. But yeah. No, I think they just wanted to share really where they wanted to go. Mary Cardis said international, would love to go back to Barcelona. Sandy Miner said, I think I would like to do domestic and hopefully see the whale migration. Living in the desert, we only see desert animals. I was raised on the sea. So, well, Sandy, we could, you know, take you over to Dana Wharf whale watching and you can see some whale migration there. Ellen Freiberg Parash said international. She'd like to go to Morocco. All right, there we go. Shelley Tucker says domestic U.S. Mary Wabel says domestic. I haven't been to too many states. Sarah Reince's Varnell, she said international. Michelle Show said international. Michelle Show also said Greece and Italy. So she wanted to tell me after she thought about it, that's where she wanted to go. Casey Jones says international. Gary Schwartz says international, all-inclusive tropical location. Okay, Gary, we'll make a note
like
of that.
A good one, yeah.
Pardon me?
I said, that one sounds like a good one.
That's a good one, yeah. Or Beverly Licata says international. Carol Gale says domestic. Niagara Falls is on my bucket list. And Susan Gardner says international to Paris. So it looks like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 say domestic. The rest are international. It's kind of a 50-50 split there.
I think because it feels like, I feel like international's, it's further out there. Like when you say if you can do anything, what we want to do, the international feels harder to do.
Uh-huh.
You know, to whereas going somewhere domestically doesn't feel if I could do anything, it feels like I could just go do it.
Exactly. That's the way I feel.
Whether it's correct or not, that's how it feels.
Yeah. I kind of feel the same way. I could do domestic pretty easy, so I would take the all in far away.
But in reality, the far away is easy too.
Yeah,
you know, it's just it's the mind frame of it.
Did you hear that, folks? Did you hear that from Sean? Listen, that's the first time I've ever heard him say that travel is easy.
I think it's all very easy. Okay, I have a very everything is easy type of attitude, but I just don't go anywhere.
Dude, okay. And I thought I was making headway. All right. Okay. On that note, we're going to step aside. We're going to bring Deanne Lubell in and sit back, and we're going to hear about her fascinating trip to Thailand. You're listening to Traveling with Françoise right here on Money Radio. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the show, everyone. You're listening to Traveling with Françoise. This segment of the show is brought to you by the Braille Institute in Rancho Mirage, offering free programs and services for seniors and others living with vision loss due to macular degeneration, glaucoma, and other conditions. Give them a call at 760-321-1111. All right. With us now is Deanne Lubell. Deanne, hi.
Hi there.
Yeah. I've been so excited about this trip. And I've been talking, Sean can verify, I've been talking about you on this trip for the last couple weeks because, as I said earlier, we've known each other a long time.
Oh, and 20 plus years.
Yes. And we are certainly used to luxury travel in a lot of different ways.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I just think trips, as what you just went on, experienced in Thailand, can really rock someone's world and change it and give you a whole new perspective. I mean, before we even talk about the trip, did this trip to Thailand do that for you? And can you pull that mic up just a little bit closer to you, closer to the mic? There you go. Okay.
It was life-changing. It truly was. I didn't know what to expect. I'd never been to Southeast Asia. I'd been to Europe and and places like that, but never to a third world country, and got to see sights and experience things that most tourists wouldn't.
And see, when you say that right there, Thailand being a third world country, the Thailand Tourism Board, certainly with all the millions of dollars in promotions that they put out there, they certainly don't make it sound like a third world country. It sounds like it's just one luxury resort after another, and you just certainly don't get that feel. And when you say third world country, what stands out? What was the change in going? Does that make sense? What was the change of the atmosphere of the trip for you? That the reality of it being a third world country?
Oh, gosh. For me, the sights, the smells, the sounds, everything. I was on sensory overload constantly. Mm-hmm. And seeing the five-star resorts, and then next to that, a tin hut where they were selling crafts or what have you. And that would be like in the city or in the beach areas. So it was kind of an oxymoron in a way. Mm-hmm. You would have your big shopping malls next to a market, you know, a marketplace where they're selling their crafts, their food, their jewelry, in an atmosphere like you would expect to have seen years ago. And then when you really go to a remote area, anything modern is just wiped away.
And it probably, and we're going to get into your remote travels, but were you really prepared? And then I want to talk about how this trip all came about as well, because we kind of need to, but see, I'm already getting ahead of myself, but were you prepared for that type, mentally, that type of remoteness?
No.
Okay. All right. That's what I...
No. I mean, simply, no.
No. Yeah. Because we just don't think of that. So let's back up just a little bit. How did this trip come about? What prompted you to say, okay, I'm going to Thailand for 3 weeks, I think you were 3 weeks, mm-hmm. three weeks there.
Yeah.
That's a big adventure.
It was. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. My boyfriend, Jeff, had lived in China for 16 years, and every year would go to Thailand and stay for about a month to 3 months. So he knew the people, he knew the culture, he knew the language, he knew the places to go. He'd experienced all these places before. So I just went along for the ride. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't a tour group. I mean, this was, we were on our own. And that was the exciting part because, like I said, I got to see things that I never in my life thought I would ever see. And he enjoyed it because he was seeing things through my eyes for the first time.
Things that he just sort of took for granted, being going there so often and just knowing the area so well. They were just commonplace to him.
Exactly.
All right. So, and I remember you and I had emailed about some business, some stuff we were talking about, and you told me that you were going, and automatically I always get excited when I hear anybody's going anywhere. I just love it. And you told me you were a little nervous because there was so much more involved even before you went on this trip.
I packed and unpacked so many times, my friends were making fun of me.
What? And shots and things that you didn't know. So let's talk about your preparation to even go on this trip. Now, Jeff, Jeff?
Mm-hmm.
Did he give you a little heads up? Did he say, don't bring a ball gown or anything like that? Or he just kind of let you sort of go on your own?
I was kind of winging it on my own in that respect, to tell you the truth. And talking to friends who had traveled, going online and reading travel logs from other people who had experienced that. So I would kind of have an idea of what to take as far as clothes and necessities.
Mm-hmm.
But prior to that, you're going into an area where there are mosquitoes, mm-hmm, and there is malaria. And so what I ended up doing, a friend of mine recommended this international doctor who is here, actually in Rancho Mirage. I have his number somewhere.
Yeah.
I'll give that later.
Because I think I know who you're talking about. But anyway,
And it's really great because he has a chart of all the countries and all the so-called diseases and possibilities of catching this and catching that, and what shots you really truly do need and what you really don't need. Mm-hmm. And then you have an option of going for it or not. So that was good. So I made some decisions to do the immunization, mm-hmm, for some things, and then kind of decided, because of my brother, he says, you're going to do what? You're going to take what? My brother had traveled to Africa many, many times, and it was recommended to take malaria pills to start them before you go. Take them while you're there. Take them when you get back. And I thought, okay, I'll do this. But I've got kind of a sensitive tummy.
Mm-hmm.
And when I told my brother this, he goes, I took them. They're not for everyone. And he said, you're probably better off getting malaria. So when he said that, I was going to be really careful, too.
Mm-hmm. Well, mosquitoes, because I am a magnet for mosquitoes. I remember when we were in Jamaica, I would be in clothes with a blanket over me. Jack would be sleeping naked on top of the bed. Not one mosquito would touch him, and I would be covered in the morning. I don't know how they got to me, but they did. And so that scares me a little bit. But is the mosquito seasonal, did you find out, or is it all the time?
That's all the time.
Oh, all the time. Okay,
You're in a climate that's damp and humid and hot, and you have mosquitoes. So I was pretty prepared for that. I'm very sensitive to chemicals, so mm-hmm, I didn't want to spray all that stuff on me, and I went online through Amazon and found a natural solution that got pretty good marks.
Uh-huh.
And it worked.
Yeah.
It worked. And then I got the little bracelets that you can get, and I was well armed. I was spraying myself constantly with that, and I didn't get any mosquito bites. I did get other kind of bites that we weren't sure where they came from.
Okay.
I'm here to talk about it, so I guess that's good.
When you were reading all this about what I could potentially get over there, or I should get these shots, or any time during this, how was your nerve level going? Because, again, folks, we're not talking about just flying over there and staying at a hotel, laying by the pool, taking a few tours, and then coming home. You knew you were going back into the jungle. Did you have a hard time deciding on what to take the more reading that you did about this trip?
I would say the more I read, the it was like, okay, I can't take everything that's in my head to take.
Yeah.
I'd need four suitcases, and you're only allowed really two. Mm-hmm. And I ended up actually with just one. I'm very proud of myself.
Oh, good for
you. I got one suitcase. But,
wow.
But I was going into three different areas. I was going to Bangkok, to this big city. Mm-hmm. I was going to Wahin on the Gulf of Siam, and that's a beach area, and then traveling way up north to almost the Burma border, where we would be actually staying in the jungle and taking these treks into very remote areas. And so I had to think and plan a wardrobe that would be suitable for all of that. And, you know, you mix and you match, but the most important piece of clothing that I found that I had was, believe it or not, was jean shorts.
Ah, okay.
They just served me well.
Mm-hmm.
Served me well. And T-shirts. And okay, guys, close your ears. But for us ladies, I was so happy that I brought extra underwear.
Okay.
And I'll tell you, it's so hot there. Yeah. And humid. And if you're like me, I like to freshen up.
Yep.
And you can't go to the local laundromat in some areas. So.
All right. Well, on that note, Deanne's underwear. No, you're so right. We're going to step aside. We'll be right back. And then we're going to break down your different destinations, your three different stops that you went. You're listening to Traveling with Françoise right here on Money Radio. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the show, everyone. You're listening to Traveling with Françoise. With me in studio today is Deanne Lubel, who just returned from a fascinating trip to Thailand. At this point, a once-in-a-lifetime experience, Deanne, but you might be doing it again.
I just might.
You just might. All right. So we talked about a little bit of your precautions and whatnot before you went. So let's talk about how long was the flight? What was your route?
From the time I left the desert to the time that I arrived in Bangkok, I figured it was 30 hours.
30 hours, uh-huh.
And that includes layovers and getting to LAX and mm-hmm. and so, but it was about 30 hours. And our mutual friend Judy Vossler advised, it's called... And I really didn't think that this would work, but it did, folks. It's called Jet Zone, and you can get it it's in the bag, and it's supplements, and you start taking it about an hour before you travel, and you take it every hour, unless you're sleeping, then mm-hmm. you don't, and it's supposed to help with the jet lag. And I swear, by the time I got to Bangkok, which is 14 hours ahead, my boyfriend Jeff, he was just he thought I'd come there and collapse for 2 days. I was raring to go that afternoon. Let's do it, and we did. We went on the first tour of Bangkok that afternoon. So I highly recommend that.
And that's Jet.
It's called Jet Zone.
Jet Zone. Okay, make a note of that, folks. Jet Zone. All right. First impression: you land, you're hyped, you're excited. Some people, their first impressions are, "Oh boy, I'm scared. I'm sure not sure I want to be here." Others, they don't see anything. They just want to get to the hotel. And others can't wait to start out. What was your first impression?
Well, I have to just back up just a tiny bit because Jeff went ahead of me by 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. So I was flying there by myself. Uh-oh. And I had a layover in Shanghai, China. And that was very nerve-wracking because they don't have very good signage and mm-hmm. directions, and no one's speaking the language. So my first impression when I got to Southeast Asia was in China. So that I was just so happy to get on that plane to Bangkok. When I got to Bangkok and got to the airport, I think what struck me first was how international it was. You saw people from every country, from all walks of life, and it was colorful and interesting. And then Jeff picked me up, and he had a driver, and which is very common to do when you're in Bangkok. And just driving from the airport to the hotel and seeing the big city buildings like you were in New York City, I'm thinking, you know, this is like being in New York, frankly. It looks just like it until you get out in the streets, and then it's mostly Asians walking around. But motorcycles. And the other thing that struck me is they have no real traffic laws. So you take your life in your own hand just walking across the street, because there's thousands of motorcycles. Strange thing, no horns honking. That struck me too. No, in New York City, I mean, that's all you hear is the honking horns. Not one horn. And how they maneuver and do the roundabouts, it was fascinating to me to see that. And the very first day I was there, Jeff took me to a park across the street that was known for its Chinese dragon monsters. And I thought, oh, what are these, you know, little chameleons running around or what? Oh, no, they're like 9 feet long. And so that my first exposure was, you know, getting pretty close to one of those.
Is it sort of like an iguana?
Yeah.
Yeah, but they're gigantic.
Oh, they're like 9 feet long. Yeah. And this one was chomping on a bird. And I'm going, oh, can we just leave now? Yeah. You know, he's loose. He's not behind a cage.
Prepping you for the forest is what he was doing. He said, if this looks really big, the other stuff might look small to her when she's out there.
Probably. Oh,
so how long did you stay in the city?
Well, we were in the city for about 4 days. The highlight for me was Chinatown, to tell you the truth, because, again, it was a market, and the food displays were so beautiful, and the color, and it's so fresh. And again, I say the sights, the smell, the colors are just overwhelming. You do not get that here in America. For some reason, it's just amplified there. From there, we drove to Hua Hin, which is about 3 hours from Bangkok, and it's a beautiful resort town on the Gulf of Siam, and a beach area, and we had a condo there. And that was like home base. And again, you would have a big shopping mall, totally modern, next to a marketplace where you'd have local natives and selling their wares. And it was just, it just was overwhelming to try and, you know, wrap your brain around this oxymoron difference. And and then walking on the beach, again, international, you saw people from all over the world. Not that many. It was kind of late in the season, which was great. So the weather was hot, humid, but not that bad. And near where we were at was called Monkey Island. So I had to go see the monkeys, and they run wild. Everything runs wild there. It was a lot of fun to just, you know, see these monkeys running around, and
you probably were, I would think, very comfortable in the beginning, thinking, "Well, this is not so bad."
Except, you know what? Yeah.
This isn't bad. I don't know what everyone was talking. Yeah. You didn't know what was in store for you. So you spent, 5 days or so?
I would say about that.
Right. And then from there, where did you go?
Then we flew up to Chiang Mai, which is the second largest city in Thailand. And the resort in the jungle where we stayed, if you want to call it a resort, trust me, people, it was not a resort. We had a bungalow. Beautiful. The setting was gorgeous. Got us to a place called Shangdao, which is the second highest mountain, 7,000 square feet. Not square feet, but seventh in elevation, 7,000 feet. Absolutely in the jungle, in the forest. Unbelievably lush green, everything you would, you know, it's stereotypical. It was fabulous. And we stayed there for, I would say, about 4 days, 5 days. And Jeff had arranged, boy, the next day, which we were Well, we went on our own. We walked about 2 miles to this temple in the middle of the jungle that you had to walk 510 steps straight up to get to. And I did it.
You did it? Oh, good. Did he give you reasons why he wanted you to see each of these different places? Obviously, he mapped this out before you got there. You had no say on where you were going.
No.
No, because you didn't know. You've never been there. You didn't know. Did he, what was his reasoning behind the places that you went? Did he have any, or just places that he found very special or just thought you would enjoy?
He had been to many of these places himself, and so they were like commonplace for him because he'd been there so many times. He felt that I'm a person that I do have a sense of adventure. Mm-hmm. I do like to get off the track. I like to get away from the city. I like to see how people live and view their culture in their settings away from, again, I'm going to say the city. And so with this in mind, and we do hike. We hike here in the desert all the time, so he knows that I can do it. I can hike. And he knew my limitations, and mm-hmm. he knew my abilities, and he mapped this all out. So the second and third day was when we had hired guides, and you have to have guides, and you have to have guides who are native to the tribes of the villages we went through. So because each village has its own language, not just the Thai language, but wherever they come from. And so you had to have someone there who can speak the language. And so I think the first day we trekked into the jungle for probably and around for maybe almost 7 hours.
And when you say trekking, we're talking about walking.
We're talking walking with your guides with machetes ahead of you and your guides saying, okay, you must be vigilant. You always have to look to the right, to the left, front and back, so many feet. And they cut us bamboo poles. And I thought they were for walking sticks, which they were. They were walking sticks. But he says, no, no, that's for your protection. You got to look up because there are snakes.
And many snakes.
Yeah. So it's like, I'm going, oh, this is going to be fun. So anyway, it truly was. Your brain just can't comprehend what you're seeing because it's so foreign and it's so exciting and it's just amazing, especially when we went through these primitive villages. Mm-hmm. And the way I described it to my friends was it was like seeing something out of a National Geographic magazine 50 to 75 years ago. That's how primitive these villages, these people were living in huts. And very, very few people get to experience and see that.
Well, I was just going to say, obviously, you didn't go on a regular tour route. She's shaking her head. Yeah, you weren't one that, we're going to get a group of people together, we're going to march back for a couple hours, and we're going to go to this village. You went to villages that, were they expecting you? Probably not. You just show up?
Well, the guides who were natives of these villages, they let them know we were coming.
They let them know you were coming.
Yeah, they you know, were going to...
Because you're a tall, blonde American. I think you sort of stood out, Deanne.
There was this one village we went through, and there was these children. The little girls were about 6 or 7 years old, and they had that typical Chinese bowl haircut and big almond eyes, and they were absolutely precious. And I tried to teach them my name, and I said, my name is Dee Dee, which is a nickname of mine. And I didn't think they really absorbed it, but they were really cute. And so when I left, they were following after me, and they were going, Dee Dee, Dee Dee, Dee Dee, Dee Dee. And that was like, oh my, I left part of my heart there. It was just so cool.
Oh, what an experience. All right, we have to take a break, one more break, and we come back. We're going to hear more about Deanne's trip to Thailand. Just incredible. You're listening to Traveling with Françoise. Welcome back to the show, everyone. You're listening to Traveling with Françoise. I am Françoise Rhodes, your host. Joining us in studio is Deanne Lubel. She's a good friend of mine. She's also an award-winning journalist. She does marketing and PR, and I don't know, he's all sorts of stuff going. Now she's been a world traveler, but this one was a completely different experience in Thailand. So we were talking about you trekking through with your guides in front and behind with machetes and snakes and villages, and it sounds like a movie just about. And I'm sure when you think back at some of this stuff, you are totally amazed at yourself at what you experienced.
I am, and I have to sometimes look at the photographs and think, wow, that's really me in that photograph. Yep. And I'm really doing that, you mm-hmm. know. I was telling Françoise that at one point they wanted to make camp, and all the guides had was their backpacks and their machetes. And I'm thinking, well, what did they have in there? Like a sandwich from 7-Eleven or what? Yeah. I don't know what they had in their backpacks. But they took those machetes and they fashioned a kitchen, a stove. And I'm going to just go through this really fast. But it was amazing. They got leaves from a tree that they made tablecloths out of. Banana leaves for our plates. They took their machetes and they made chopsticks and they made spoons and they cooked rice over an open campfire and they had curry sauce and they had chicken roasting. And I was just dumbfounded. It was just incredible.
And with water, I gather, were you all have to bring a certain amount of water? I know bottled water, I'm sure, is what you drank.
Yes.
Did each of you, were you allotted so much to take, or how did you figure that
out? Our guides had the water with them, bottled water. At one point, one guide went to a river and filled up his water bottle, and I thought, oh, no, there's no way in heck I'm going to do that.
Restroom facilities. I mean, we're talking about you being out in the jungle, Deanne. I mean, you didn't have porta-potties along the way.
That's right.
Yeah. And how nerve-wracking was that, knowing that there's snakes and all this stuff out there?
Oh, yeah. It's easy for you guys, but us ladies, it's not that easy. Trust me. So, no, I had to just be extra careful, and that's all we'll say about that.
Yeah. All right. So all this happening, all these things going around. Now, there were some pictures of you with elephants.
Oh, yes. That was outside of Wahin. And I'm an elephant lover, and I always have been, and I've never been up close and personal to one. But I didn't want to go to a circus act or sideshow or anything like that. And so Jeff arranged for us to go to a elephant rescue sanctuary, and we were the only tourists there. I didn't know what to expect. I just wanted to pet an elephant that had been rescued. And we get there. And the people who ran it were so wonderful, and they said, well, come, we'll take a hike with one of the elephants. Would you like to do that? And I was like, I was unbelievable. And we did. We went for about probably a mile and a half through the savanna with a guide, with an elephant untethered. I mean, he's just walking with us.
Yeah.
And, of course, we had baskets of bananas to feed him. And I think that was one of the most incredible experiences of my life. And then we got back, and the guide said, well, would you like to wash your elephant? And I'm like, gosh, he's awfully big. okay. Yeah. So he hands me a hose, and I'm washing her down. And, that was really, truly one of the highlights, too.
And were the monkeys and everything still all over the place when you're doing all this? Or just...
No, they were just... I only saw the monkeys on Monkey Island. I didn't see them in the jungle. I didn't see the lions and the tigers and the bears. Oh, my. I didn't see that either in the jungle. They're there, but we didn't see them.
You didn't see them. At the elephant sanctuary, how many elephants did they mention that they had there?
They had seven. Uh-huh. And they had been rescued either because of injuries or because of their age. There was one elephant that was 108 years old.
Oh, my. And it still had its tusks?
Some had broken tusks, mm-hmm. and some had ripped ears, but mended, don't get me wrong, because they were rescued and they looked healthy and happy and relaxed and just exactly the way I wanted to see them.
You said this is a dream come true.
And it was.
Because I saw pictures of you with the elephants. Now, we talked about a little bit of food when you were out and your treks. When you got to the villages, these different villages along your different adventures, did you eat what the villagers offered you? Because I don't think they had any fast food restaurants or any big old restaurants around for you to go and sit down with wine and all that. I think, how did you go about the meals?
Well, there was one village, and they knew we were coming, and they prepared a feast for us. Oh. And it was foods that we normally wouldn't eat, but it was appetizing looking. It was nothing that looked disgusting, which I had seen some things in Bangkok that I wouldn't put in my mouth, but it actually was surprisingly very beautiful. The display, a lot of fresh fruits, pineapple, mangoes, and just like eating candy, juicy, wonderful. And after being on a long trek through the jungle, coming back and having the mangoes and that juicy, cool stuff. But rice, they made soups, and we ate it. I wouldn't insult them.
Right, and not. But what was the oddest item that you saw that you didn't eat?
Well, that was probably on the airplane coming back from China.
Okay.
I described it certain ways, and I can't do it this time on the air, but let me tell you, when they put the plate down, I stared at that thing for a long time. It looked like a big piece of rubber with spikes, and I don't know. That was it.
How about what is the oddest thing you ate over there?
The oddest thing?
That you thought to myself, I can't believe I'm eating this. There had to be one item.
Oh, gosh, Francoise. Probably fish cheek.
Fish cheek.
Fish cheek. Okay. Yeah, I told Jeff, I said, I don't want to eat fish cheek. And he goes, you're going to love it. I go, it doesn't sound appetizing to me. But anyway, I did, and it was delicious.
Oh, there you
it
go.
Just doesn't look so great on the plate.
Yeah. You know? When all was said and done, because I know there's so many experiences and we're running out of time and you have all these great little items that you brought to share with us. I think you're going to have to make me a list so I can post some of them or talk about them on the next one. What I want to say, what did you really take as a person going on all these different experiences, things you've never done before? What did you take from this trip, Deanne, back for you personally that you think about that maybe changed the way you think about life?
That there are people in this world who live so much differently and are happy with what they have, and they have very little. I think that struck me more. I just gave myself goosebumps. Mm-hmm. I think that struck me more than anything. Going through these villages, and you go into a hut where there's a family of 10 living in a small room on a dirt floor on mats and cooking their pots over a campfire, making their own soap and smiling. They don't know any better. They're happy with what they have. So I think one thing I came back was being very appreciative of what I have and being very careful now not to complain about the little stuff.
Yeah, that's something. Oh, fantastic. I just, like I say, I could listen for hours. I just think it's so amazing. Well, congratulations to you. I know you're going to be doing this again. Who knows where you'll go next? Is there a book in the works on this?
There might be. I'm thinking about it.
Okay. Well, we'd love to have Jeff on at one point also, and he can talk about the place he loves so much over there and some of the experiences that he has had through the years. So, Deanne, thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Okay, folks. So that's it. That's going to wrap this show up. We'll be back next week. Next week, we're going to actually find out how to properly dispose of your worn-out American flag. And also, there's a new bus company called FlixBus. It's big in Europe, and it's coming here to the United States. And it's going to show travelers and Americans what the bus system is all about. So have a great one, everyone. And remember that it's never too late to get a life. See you next time. Bye.